This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlot. Today, Rebecca Cruz and I are providing a review of some of the most interesting and important international issues we discussed throughout 2017. This is our favorite time of the year, Rebecca Cruz, and we get to go back over the year and review the year and kind of look back and look forward. It's the end of 2017. It's been a long and tough year in many ways regarding world affairs and some of the things that we've dealt with around the world, as well as some of the things we've faced in this country. But let's start with you, Rebecca, and look at kind of the year in review regarding elections. This was a year of elections. We had a lot of elections around the world, and some very interesting outcomes, some that maybe were surprising. So can you give us the rundown about what we saw over 2017 regarding elections?
Yeah, it has been quite the year. I'm not sure that there were more elections than there usually are, but we certainly were paying a lot more attention than we have been in the past. And there are tons to mention, but let me just mention a couple. One of the big ones that we followed in May was the Iranian presidential election. This was really interesting. There were over 1,600 people that had essentially put their name in to be considered, and it was winnowed down. We saw the reemergence during this time of Ahmadinejad, who was interested in asserting his power or getting back in the game, and he was quickly told that he would not be allowed to run and made some other comments in that regard. It was also really interesting in Iran how much social media was used. This has been going on with social media has been important there really since 2009 and one of the other elections that Ahmadinejad was involved in. But this was the first time that we really saw some of the conservative parties be really, really active on social media. So that was a big change. In the end, though, Rouhani was reelected and things seemed to have continued as expected. But we did pay a lot of attention to that. Another one that drew our attention was in Kenya. This was a very hotly contested election. There was some concern that this would go back to the violent days of a couple of their past elections. And there were some really weird things that happened. For example, there was a machete attack, as well as a couple of murders. One of those that was murdered was part of the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, so someone that was there to help make sure that the election was conducted fairly. Once the election took place, it actually was contested on a couple of different levels. It was a federal election, so the parliamentary election stood, but they did call for the presidential election to be essentially a do-over, to do it again. The Supreme Court of Kenya determined that. They went back and forth. In the end, the do-over never happened, and the president, Kenyatta, was elected, and so things have moved on from there, but very interesting to watch that as well. A number of other very interesting elections, but I think the big three that we really paid attention to were the elections in Europe, and I'm talking here about Belgium, France, and Germany. And we paid attention because we were interested to see if some of the electoral results from 2016, the kind of push more towards the right or towards the populist parties, was going to continue and just how far that was going to go. And there seemed to be mixed results with these three elections. If we looked at Belgium, we saw Mark Rutte and his party for freedom and democracy. They did retain a majority, which was somewhat unexpected. But what was interesting was that the more left party that had been a very significant player for a long time, they lost quite a bit. And we do see in that country the more populist party gained quite a bit of electoral support. So that was kind of our first indication early in March that things were going to not be as expected. We then had the French elections, which we were all very, very interested in. And in the French electoral system, it was necessary that someone win a majority. And so we actually had two elections here with a runoff. And there was a lot of talk about the fact that you, in the runoff, had two very interesting candidates. You had Macron, who was the eventual victor, and you also had Marine Le Pen, who was part of the National Front, a very vocal national, some would say populist party, kind of a France first sort of party. And she did quite well in that first election. And so there was a lot of discussion about what would happen going forward. In the follow-up, the runoff, Macron did win decisively. And later on, his party, a new party, a relatively new party in Marche, did end up coming in and getting some support there. So again, some interesting returns there. And then finally, in Germany, We also saw Angela Merkel face quite a bit of a challenge. Her CDU party, the Christian Democratic Party, they were able to retain the majority, and she did become or stay as chancellor. But we did see the SPD, the Social Democrats, they suffered quite a bit at the polls. Actually, they're the lowest number since World War II. And we saw, again, the rightist party or the populist party, the AfD, the Alternative for Deutschland, do quite well. And for the first time, they are in the Congress or the Bundestag in Germany at 12%, which is pretty significant. So all of this together, if we think about these three elections in Europe, we're looking at a response to what's been going on with immigration specifically, which I know you'll talk about here in a second, as well as some concerns about how immigration has affected economies and how the social safety net is going to deal with immigration going forward. So I know you have some more that you can add on there.
Well, it's interesting to start with the elections of 2017 around the world with you, Rebecca, but of course, flipping it back to the United States, the election, presidential election was in 2016, but we saw a new administration begin in 2017 in January. So immediately following that inauguration, of course, we have worldwide impact. And so some of the things that you saw happen in Europe perhaps was a response to what we saw happen here in the United States. But certainly on the side of immigration is a huge issue in Europe and around the world. It certainly has been for us here in the U.S. So one of the things that I think we can highlight through 2017 are those executive orders that were put forth immediately following the inauguration of President Trump in January. And so what that first travel ban did, travel restrictions targeting countries from the Muslim world, Iraq, Syria, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen, all dominant Muslim countries. And so there was huge outcry about this, lots of protests, a lot of legal action.
And people stuck at the airport.
At the airport stuck because they were targeting actually people with green cards. So there was a lot of confusion and a lot of outcry immediately following that. And then a few revisions until we get to an updated travel ban in September that removed. Actually, there was an update, I believe, in March that removed Iraq. That was a huge issue because of the refugees and because of the number of people that have helped us fight the war in Iraq over the years. That they were removed from the list. I believe Sudan came off the list, but Chad, North Korea, Venezuela added to the list. So a total of 8 countries, and this ban is now partially in effect. So the whole year we've spent dealing with lots of immigration issues coming out through executive orders, a lot of challenges in the court, legal action, outcry, rallies. Of course, add to that the DACA decision as well for the DREAM Act and those the children that have been brought to the United States as illegal immigrants and have lived most of their lives here. That was then ended and kicked back to the Congress to deal with, but that's where we stand on the whole immigration side of things. So, you know, that was a substantive issue for many in around the world and many of those elections that you talked about, and certainly one of the global outcomes of the U.S. election in, of course, November 2016, but with the Trump administration taking power in 2017. Now, let's extend this conversation a little bit further because you mentioned elections in Iran, and we can't ignore the fact that there was a huge, you know, year. There was a huge year in the Middle East as well. Again, I mean, we talk about the Middle East every year, and one of the big things, not just the election in Iran, the consistent standoff between Iran, Saudi Arabia, the incursions of Saudi Arabia into places like Yemen, but also the war in Syria. Really, the United States and its coalition working in collaboration with what we have called the Syrian Democratic Forces, which are really Kurds. It's a group of Kurds that have been fighting ISIS and fighting the Syrian government. So in collaboration with them, we really were successful, this coalition, in ending the territorial state for ISIS. You know, they no longer hold that 25% of the territory that they held in Syria. So now the United States and its coalition holds 25% of the territory in Syria. And they hold 50% of that country's oil and gas. And so what's interesting now is that we have said we're not going to leave. anytime soon. So we've solved one problem. Well, at least potentially solved. At least we've ended kind of ISIS as a territorial state. The concern now, of course, is that they'll just break up into cells. They'll still be active. I mean, I don't think anybody thinks that ISIS is done, but they're done, I guess, with the caliphate there. They're done with in terms of having that territory. But we've solved that problem, and we've become ensconced once again in another Middle East conflict, and has a lot to do with the future of Syria, because clearly we're working with the Kurds. They're going to expect something out of this. They, of course, want their own state. Turkey and others who have Kurdish issues are very much opposed to that. So this is tipping the scales of political power in the region and kind of siding with Kurdish nationalism, trying to negotiate a political solution to the end of the Syrian civil war. And so becoming more, again, kind of entrenched in this conflict there. So very interesting outcome and I think a turn of the tides regarding that conflict. Speaking with Rebecca Cruz about the many global issues we reviewed on this year's program. After the break, we will discuss some of the ways China is demonstrating global leadership on issues such as the environment. You're listening to Worldviews. I'm Suzek Rolat, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Let's get back to my conversation with Rebecca Cruz about 2017 news highlights from around the world. Let's look at Asia and do kind of a review of the year in Asia, a year in which the Trump administration ended our role in the Paris Climate Accords and the impact that that's had on Asia, ending, of course, our negotiations and involvement in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP. So, Rebecca, tell us about that and how maybe China is being boosted in some ways by what the Trump administration is doing.
Well, it's somewhat interesting. We've been talking for years about a pivot towards Asia, and I'm not sure that we're necessarily pivoting, but perhaps the world's attention is pivoting towards Asia. And I kind of was thinking about this and thinking about some of the elections, some of the things that have been going on here in the last year. And internationally, it seems to me that we're also seeing the U.S. a bit in retreat and in retrenchment. And we have a couple of examples of this that may also give opportunity to China to assert itself even more so than it already has been. You mentioned the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP. This was an economic partnership between countries that are along the Pacific, representing about 40% of the global economic outcome. So a great deal. And it did and still does, for whatever part of it still exists, did include China. Now, the reason that we withdrew from this was that many felt that it was too secretive. There was bipartisan disagreement over how good this would be for our economy, many feeling that we would lose jobs. So there were a lot of reasons for why we withdrew, but we did withdraw. We also withdrew this year from UNESCO, the UN body that is in charge of promoting education, science, and culture. The reason that was given is because the presidential administration felt that UNESCO is too favorable to Palestine. But that's another instance of us withdrawing from the world stage. And then finally, the Paris Climate Accords. This was a huge thing that occurred a couple years ago where countries around the world committed to working to deal with emissions and gases in the environment, trying to bring the temperature of the earth down just a degree, but that would be significant to change the environment. And in the spring, the president of the United States said that we would be withdrawing. Now, there's been some back and forth about how that's actually going to happen, if that's actually going to happen going forward. But this was very, very significant. We had leaders across the world really complaining that the United States, who should be a leader in the world, especially on environmental issues, as one of the biggest polluters in the world, that we were withdrawing in this way. What has been so interesting is that China, the biggest polluter in the world, anyone that's been to China, has been to Beijing, you can literally see it, they have really stepped up in this area. They've stepped up in some of these other areas as well, but particularly in regards to the environment. They are seeing themselves as an international leader on this. And there's a couple of reasons that this is happening with China. One is that it cannot be ignored, that it is literally visible. It's also a means for them to have some global influence, not just security-wise, which we've seen certainly in other areas of Asia and elsewhere, but in something that's seen as not, well, you could look at it as a security issue, but as something else. They also see the value in this. There are scientists in their government that see the value, so there's no convincing them that it's real. And the folks in the business industry see this as a new market that can be explored and to used to their advantage.
Well, of course, this is just a really interesting turnabout. In fact, the way in which China has been empowered on an issue like the environment. And we've talked for years on this show about China and their reaching out in the South China Sea, for example. But our allies, the United States allies, Japan, South Korea, becoming more and more concerned about a growing, rising, escalating and pushing out their power, projecting their power, China and the way in which we're withdrawing. And this raises another issue in Asia, and that is North Korea. I mean, what we saw happen, of course, over the years is a tremendous escalation in at least the rhetoric, right? I mean, North Korea has certainly, we can focus on their capability, the fact that they've fired off multiple missile tests, long-range missiles, those that are capable of striking actually the east coast of the United States potentially. We know they have nuclear warheads, or they have nuclear capability. They have the nuclear warhead possibility, and now they're working on delivering that. And so the capability is concerning enough. But then you've got the war of words and the rhetoric and the fact that you have President Trump saying, you know, we're going to meet that with fire and fury, and calling the leader, Kim Jong-un, Rocket Man. And then, of course, the North Koreans responding with President Trump being a crazy thug and fat, and calling him fat and, you know, pathetic. And so this escalation, if you will, in tensions, and really raising this kind of David and Goliath scenario once again, how, there's just no real, seems to be no insight here. There are no talks, there are no discussions, there's increased international sanctions focused on North Korea, and we just don't know where this is going to go. So this has been a very interesting year on that issue as well.
And again, China is the linchpin there.
Well, and China has both negative and positive interactions with North Korea. And as you said, the linchpin, because they are the only ones really that have much of a relationship with North Korea. But they're also very concerned about North Korea kind of spiraling out of control. North Korean refugees come across the border. I mean, they're puzzled and frustrated by them as well.
Absolutely.
So, but it again raises the role that China plays in that region on North Korea. Well, let's bring this pretty close to a close. I mean, we can't cover everything on our year in review, but let's end this show on something again, Rebecca, that you and I come back to often, and that's maybe because we're women. But Time Magazine referred to, you know, women as being the year of women, the Me Too women, the silence breakers being the people of the year. And so let's talk about women. This has been a big year for women around the world in response, of course, to President Trump's election, marches in the United States and around the world, gatherings, outings of that whole Me Too movement in 85 countries where we saw Me Too movements, on social media, outings of journalists and business owners and entertainment officials and high profile people, politicians. This is perhaps the time when women are grabbing back and pushing back and speaking up. Some have said that 2018 will be another year for women. But what can we say about this issue?
Well, there can be no doubt that President Trump has brought out a great deal of concern and animosity amongst women in this country, but in women around the world. And perhaps what started as concern about what a Trump administration would look like has really evolved into something much, much larger than that. And I think we can really start with Trump's inauguration and the International Women's March that was held in January of last year. There's an estimated 673 marches around the world. So this was very much a global global endeavor. And we can think about the World Health Organization. They have claimed that 1 in 3 women around the world have experienced sexual violence of some sort. And they don't measure sexual discrimination, but we can assume that that number is much, much higher if the Me Too campaign is any indication. In fact, it seems that almost every woman I have talked to has at some point in her life experienced some sort of discrimination, negative talk, something be in their workplace, elsewhere. So it's been really fascinating starting with these marches. We then did have this Me Too campaign that started over the summer. And again, we've been talking a lot in this country about the consequences here, but it has been international. And this has really sparked something in women all over. In France, for example, a new conversation has evolved, and they didn't do Me Too. They did a hashtag of Out the Pigs, really putting people's names out there that had treated them wrongly. And Marcon has actually had to address this on several levels. Beyond that, think about a country like Sweden, which is known as a very liberal, women-friendly country. They, too, have had a huge number of women come out and say, yes, me too. I also was attacked or discriminated against in some way. And even thinking about Asia, if we think about Singapore, a place well, that culturally these are topics that aren't necessarily addressed, there are advocates in Singapore that are saying that reports of sexual violence have actually doubled in some instances in the last month since the Me Too campaign has come out. So it is significant. Women are talking, they are voicing their concerns, and they are doing it in social media and anywhere that can be heard. And we are finally seeing a response, at least in some areas.
And even in places like Saudi Arabia, where this year the ban on women driving in Saudi Arabia came to an end. So, I mean, there'd been a lot of activism on that issue. Maybe some bright spots along these lines. Civil society stepping up, women stepping up, others that are facing various forms of inequality and harassment and exploitation stepping up.
Because it isn't just women. We should point that out.
That's right. So it's definitely maybe the year that many people are going to step up. But and we used to do predictions on this show. It's hard to do anymore. But what I think we can maybe predict is that it'll be another very interesting, but certainly exciting year coming up.
Well, and we'll be here to talk about it. I do know that.
That's right. Thank you so much, Rebecca, for being here all year long. Thank you for reviewing the year with me. Thanks to everyone who's listening for being a part of Worldviews. We wish everyone a happy holiday, happy new year, and we look forward to speaking with you again in 2018. You've been listening to my conversation with my colleague, Rebecca Cruz, about some of the most significant global issues from 2017. What did you think about world events throughout this past year? Let us know on social media. You can engage with us on Twitter. We're at WorldviewsKGOU, and I'm at Suzette Grelot. Or you can leave comments in the Worldview section of KGOU.org. KGOU produces Worldviews in partnership with the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. Many thanks to Katie Holland for preparing our research this year, to Jacob McClellan for editing our interviews, and to Sam Dupre for producing our show. For Rebecca Cruz, happy holidays and happy 2018. I'm Suzette Grelot.